Welcome, folks. You have just tuned in to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig. I'm Craig Hartman, your host, and tonight we are very lucky to have the chef from Maya Restaurant in Charlottesville. And remember, Chew the Fat is your podcast where you get the raw, unedited, uncensored, real interviews with food personalities. We are the podcast that is leading the way in the entire world today for this type of interview. We might just be the only one, but...
Groundbreaking.
And remember, you can you found us today at Seaville Podcast, which is right here in the beautiful confine of the Charlottesville Radio Group. And we have some of the most beautiful studios you've ever seen in the world. So you're here listening to Chew the Fat. Also, remember to sound out. We're really interested to know what you think. We're interested to know how you feel about the podcast, if there's anything we can do to make your listening enjoyment even better, as well as any questions you would like me to pose to people, anybody you'd like me to interview. That would be cool. So sound out and go to chewfat.net. That's my blog, chewfat.net. We are starting a new area on that blog. The chefs and food personalities I'm interviewing are going to give me some really great recipes that you can download and use them in your own home or in your kitchen. If you're a young chef listening, remember, this podcast is designed to inspire you and maybe even appall you every once in a while. Now, tonight, lucky enough, we have Chef Todd Grieger from Maya Restaurant in downtown Charlottesville. Now, I've eaten at Maya quite a few times. One of my favorite dishes in all of Charlottesville is the rainbow trout. I happen to be a huge rainbow trout lover. But Maya is a restaurant where you can go and get some really straightforward food, extremely well done. And the menu's not overcomplicated, but there's a lot of love in the food. And Todd's behind the line. He's there many hours in the week. And actually, he was there about 2 minutes ago. Ran over here to the to our studio, and actually, he still has grease all over his shoes. He's got burn marks on his arms, so he's the man. How you feeling tonight?
I feel great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you because you know we talked to Justin Hershey recently from Zinc, and we talked with Harrison Keevil from Brookville. And one of the really neat things I think about Charlottesville is that we have this restaurant scene that's I think is pretty cool. You know, it's not a restaurant scene where people are trying to just go out there and outdo each other for no reason. There's a lot of thought put in to the food here, and we happen to be in the middle of a scene with some beautiful producers and everything. And so
by producers, you mean farms and...
Farms, cheesemakers, you know, people who raise animals, winemakers, all kinds of artists and whatnot. And so...
restaurants that show art local artists.
And you, Todd, are one of the young... with Justin, the young guns of Charlottesville. So you're a part of our Young Gun series. Todd, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was... born and bred in Charlottesville. I'm 37, so I don't know how young I am, but I guess young and up and coming is a good way to describe it.
Up and coming.
But I went to Almar High School. My family has roots here, so it's been here for a long time. I've been in the restaurant business since I was 17, so I've seen, a progression of how, things have evolved.
Sure, Yeah.
From the downtown mall specifically forward, to Main Street. So, and it's been fun to watch how good restaurants have sort of expanded away from the mall. You're from Clifton, so I know outside the outskirts of town. But, the local food scenes here is great. You mentioned farms. I deal with 18 to 25 farms, depending.
Yeah, right.
During the height of the summertime, quite a bit more. Yeah. Anywhere from local chicken to collard greens to sweet potatoes to whatever you want. So. Mm-hmm. The accessibility is great. It's a homey feel to it also. And the relationship, between from the farmer to the customer is really good here, which is, I think what makes this area great.
Yeah.
You know, for food.
Well, let me ask you this, Tom. So you're born and bred here in beautiful Charlottesville, which is, by the way, the only place I've ever lived, moved away, and came back to. Yeah. And I always said, look, when I move somewhere, I'm moving forward. I am not a backwards moving guy. But I was living in the mountains of Colorado.
Cliffhouse, yeah.
Yeah, I was just up there in the mountains. I loved it. But you know what? I missed Charlottesville, and I missed Central Virginia. So here I am, and you've lived here all your life. And this is really kind of a unique situation as a chef, okay? You grew up here in town. You worked in a lot of restaurants. What was your first restaurant job in Charlottesville?
I worked at the Brick Oven in Rye Hill Shopping Center.
Sure.
John Steedman and Susan Steedman. Good people. I was 17.
Yeah.
I was actually started in the front of the house waiting tables. And
sure.
And he made me a pizza chef. And that was kind of the beginning of it. And, I did the usual, 6 months here, 6 months there.
Yeah.
Those types of things. And my family comes, from the restaurant industry. My stepmother has been, serving and catering for a long time.
Sure.
Both my aunts on her side have owned catering companies of which I've worked for. So,
yeah. Right here in Charlottesville?
Yeah. It was Glorious Foods was the
nice.
Name of that.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Company. Yeah. I remember Glorious Foods.
Did a lot of like nice high end stuff.
Yeah.
Sort of like a mom and pop type of thing, mm-hmm. but it was a good experience. And, you got to see sort of the other side too. And, $1 billion horse farms. And 2 days later, you'd be over doing some kind of like wine and cheese thing at some, mom and pop's house, So it was, it was a very good experience for me.
That's awesome.
8 years serving and then into the kitchen when I was, 27.
Yeah.
So,
well, we won't hold the server thing against you.
Yeah, please don't.
We have talked about that in the past, but we won't hold it. We won't hold it against you. So, because it's pretty unique, you're here in Charlottesville, and you've worked at quite a few places.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quick, go through the places you've been in the kitchen, because I think it's unique, and also it's kind of inspiring for the young people of Charlottesville to realize one thing, which we'll get to after you go through this. But go ahead, go through. Where'd you? Give us your kitchens.
I started, the Brick Oven would be a kitchen position,
sure,
but I wasn't really, serious about the kitchen.
It's okay, because this is really a good point of starting in the Brick Oven.
And there's, that's also a good point to think about the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
There's many opportunities within it, and
mm-hmm.
It's a viable, very respectable position for you to do, and, anybody can, can find a home there.
Right.
There's a lot of different people you can associate with. But I guess Skip Doan at the Downtown Grill was really the first person that gave me a shot.
Sure.
I worked South Station for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
And then, I skipped Papagayo's out at, Rio Hill was there for a while too, which I was a sous chef there, but, really didn't kind of comprehend what the meaning
right.
of that word
yeah.
was, but,
yeah.
Or the position, but, uh-huh. Skip gave me a shot, trained me the right way to do things,
sure.
Organization, cleanliness,
mm-hmm.
attention to detail, all these things are very important. And then I went to Blue Light. And
right.
worked for Mike Catola, who works for you now. Who currently works at Moss for Tomas.
Yeah, sure.
Good friend of mine, and certainly a very good influence on me. And worked for Reed there after
right.
Mike left and took over Star Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with the Red Light Restaurant Group for about 7 years in various different incarnations.
Sure.
Moss as a line cook, Mai Loco as a sous chef, exec at Star Hill. I left the company and went to the CNO and worked for. Dave, for about a year, really didn't like catering all that much, I have to say.
Yeah,
so
right.
I got out of it and, went back to Blue Light and,
uh-huh.
Took management position there again and then left there. And I've been at Maya for 4 years and that's where I've been since then. So,
But I'll tell you what I think is really interesting. I went to the Culinary Institute of America. We've interviewed some folks from the New York Culinary Institute, some more from the Culinary Institute, New England Culinary Institute. We had Tucker, who, has worked in some really great restaurants, not necessarily, a chef school guy. But, here's a hometown guy who starts in the pizza place, mm-hmm. in the Brick Oven Pizza, and works his way through and now is the chef at Maya. Which is really a great restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great restaurant to go to. The food is always consistent.
Thank you.
And it shows, it shows folks that you don't have to do things necessarily a certain way to get where you're going to go, as long as you stick with it.
Well, you have to do certain things the right way.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the important
now,
thing.
Now, along that way, you know, you probably had some pretty good mentors. Who would you think would be your number one mentor, probably from the period of the brick oven to Maya?
I'd say Reed was definitely, Reed Anderson is his name. He just came back from San Diego working out there as a general manager of a Sheraton property.
Sure.
he really kind of, you know, like started making me think about how to make a plate, you know, gave me some rope to hang myself with and let me make mistakes, which is really the only way to learn, you know, is to try things and fail at them and learn from that and then reapply it. You know, you can read everything you want in a book or take all the classes you want, but if you can't execute, you can't execute.
Sure.
So he really let me do that, let me do whatever I wanted, you know, never really said no. You know, let me talk about food to people that worked, like i.e. specials and talking to wait staff and explaining my process and things that I do to make food good and hopefully good. And, you know, and we had a friendship from that. He wasn't, you know, a miser, you know, he wasn't somebody that berated me or made me feel bad, you know, yelled at me when I needed it.
Kind of like me.
Kind of exactly like you, Chef. Forget, I know all your boys, you know what I'm saying? Exactly like you.
We've
actually
made a couple people
Brooks,
cry.
For example, you know, I'll use him as a, you know, he says a lot of the same ways of things about you the same way. And I've never been formally educated from the senses that I've never been to skills class or been to, you know, you know, have a culinary degree. But, you know, I bought Jacques Pepin's La Technique and I worked my way through Lesson 1, Lesson 30. So it was Except the ice carving. I didn't do that.
You know, I love that book. But, I'm glad you brought that book up, and I'm glad that someone younger than me has read La Technique by Jacques Pepin. It's a great book. Huh?
It is a great book. There's pictures, and it's pretty Frenchy. You know, it's old school, and it's you know, and it's easy to read. You know,
so that brings me to another point. Then, you know, you went through this kind of the education of Todd Grieger to get to where you are today, and you're in a position that, you know, young chefs would really like to get to, and a position where, you know, people will get to know you through your food when they come to Maya. But it just didn't really happen, right? You're a self-studier, right? I mean, to tell me that you took the book and you actually went through La Technique, which has some really great fundamental but not easy things, you know, deboning a chicken from the back and making a galantine, things like that,
which is probably the epitome of what French food's all about. But
So tell us about the things you did on your own then. Other than that, are there other books you read? Do you think about food when you're not at work?
I think about food pretty much all the time. You know, there's so much you can do. I mean, molecular gastronomy is my new thing, you know. I know you haven't interested in it yourself. You know, it's making food fun and beautiful and also tastes delicious, and which is the number one thing, of course. But, you know, but being interesting and enjoyable for people to look at and to have an experience when they sit down at a table and they look at a plate of food and they see what your thought process is about what you're trying to do. And hitting all four of the major components to what a dish needs to be. But you know, I bought the French Laundry cookbook. I can't say that, you know, whenever I feel stuck about, or I feel like I'm, you know, verging on cutting corners, you know, I read, you know, Keller and what a Nazi he really is about what he does.
Yeah.
And it gets me back kind of focused on that. And that's, you know, I mean, even if you have a culinary degree or you don't, you know, you have to do, you know, continuing education, you know, you have to teach yourself new things and, you know, it's a process as well as a craft. So, you know, you have to stay engaged and excited in what you're doing. And, in order for the customer to be engaged and excited, you know, and love what you do, you know, and, cause it's hard work, you know, and it's a lot of hours and you got to like that. And
you have
to be a little bit of a control freak.
On the interesting side, cause I don't want to get that far away from the French Laundry. That cookbook, I think, I think changed a lot of people's lives and started a whole slew of really fine cookbooks. But when you are at home and you are thinking about this food and you do look at books like that, can you tell me one thing you took from that particular book? As people are listening, they're going to say, well, I think I might grab that book. And, you know, it's funny now because that's like 8 years old or even maybe not 7, 8 years old. But what was the one thing you took from that particular book?
That you can never have too much attention to detail, you know, and always use the best product you can get your hands on, no matter what. And, I remember when I first looked at that book, I was like, wow, this food's super complicated. It's difficult. And, later on, as I got a lot more experience, now it's not really that difficult to execute. But what is difficult to mimic is his, how much care he takes at every phase of everything that he does from the time he orders. And this farm to table concept actually also is, cause he really, highlights his purveyors in that cookbook and his connection with his purveyors and therefore his diner's connection with the people that provide his food.
Right.
That really struck me. And how important that is, you're never going to make something great out of something that's terrible when you get it. Making a stock, you'll never have a clean sauce if you start with a dirty stock.
Yeah.
And the value of fundamentals, how important it is to take just as much care with the small parts as it is with the big main, whatever your focus is on that plate, because it's all the same, finished product. And, even if the customer might not tell, in your head, if it's not right.
Mm-hmm. True enough. I think that book even changed my life a little bit. And I was a little bit older and read that book and I thought, this guy's special. Mm. And the way that he put it out to show young chefs, I think was fantastic.
And how he didn't change his recipes at all.
Right.
Like, he didn't make them easier for you to execute at home.
Yeah.
He gave you exactly what he did, and he was like, I'm going to show you what I do. Now you're going to have to, there is no other way to doing it. This is it,
True enough. Hey, now let's go back to childhood because it's pretty neat. You were 17, you went to the brick oven. But when you were a kid, were you thinking, hey, when I get in high school, I'm going to go to the brick oven, get a job, and I'm going to become a chef? Or did you have something else in your head? Were you like, was there something you thought?
I thought about doing as little as possible, basically, probably when I was a kid, I found the restaurant business as many people do, it was in service. So it's maximum output, minimum input. I mean, you can come in at 4 and get off at 10, make a couple bucks, put them in your pocket. And that's kind of where I was at, and I was at Piedmont and, I kind of found a home in the restaurant business cause I was looking and I know now what I was looking for is what I'm doing. But at that time I didn't really have any idea. And, college, culinary school, these types of places are, fundamental for that kind of thing,
Sure.
But, the answer is I did not feel a calling, per se, until I actually got into that kitchen.
But so what were you thinking as a child? Were you like, well, when I grew up, I'd like to be a cowboy. I like to rustle up some horses or that's what I thought actually. So that's why I'm saying it. Mm-hmm. Or astronaut our producer, Mike Bixeglia, he wanted to be, Yogi Berra. So, I mean, did you have something or did you just kind of like,
I wanted to be a writer, that's kind of what I love to read. And I love being, at home reading a book, I took a journal, I realized I wasn't a very good writer. I was just a very good reader, And so food writing also might be something I'd be interested in later on.
Yeah, sure.
I like to not be critical, necessarily as being,
sure,
supportive of it, but I kind of feel like I found this industry. I wanted to be a writer, and I enjoyed playing golf as a kid. Once again, I wasn't good enough, nor ever could even be play professional golf. But you know, I was, I mean, I think the restaurant industry finds people that are, you know, oftentimes, you know, don't have a clear path, you know, and it gives them a trade and a craft. And
so were you, as a youth, were you like pretty peaceful and laid back, or were you like all out? Were you, were you like the wayward youth?
I was a wayward youth. I was a wayward 20s. You know, I mean, like, well, you know, if you want to get into that, you know.
I did a class in Colorado for the school system of Colorado Springs for their guidance counselors, because I believed that the kitchen was a place for, you know, kids that were not real focused on things, because, you know, when you're on the line, you don't have any choice but to be focused, and it really – I think it's great for people. So what I'm getting at, you're kind of like the accidental chef.
I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, I was kind of a wild child and a wild kid, and I was wild into my 20s. And, you know, as we probably all know, the restaurant business doesn't do anything to calm you down in that capacity. So, you know, I mean, to excess too sometimes. So I think you're right about that. I basically had to get my stuff together and focus. And right. Once I did and, you know, and realized that to be successful, not only managing a business, which is what, you know, a chef does. And cooking is, you know, the other half of that. And putting your employees in situations to be successful so that you can be successful is really the key to the, and being focused. And, you know, I had to learn that, you know, that was something I had to learn
But you did it. You learned it.
I did.
And you know,
there was bumpy roads there. Here.
So what were your passions, youth wise? Did you have some passions? Like,
I loved swimming. You know, I loved to be, you know, I loved being outdoors. Loved hanging out with my friends. You know, I loved to read. I read a lot. I still read a lot. My girlfriend Jacqueline, you know, really kind of helps facilitate that too.
That's a shout out for Jack Conlogue.
Hey, honey, how you doing? I
think that you know, as we talk to chefs, you know, I asked this question to a lot of them before. Did you eat a lot when you were a kid? Did you ever cook when you were a child? Did you eat really good food? Did you just eat Cheerios?
I think my stepmother probably was my greatest influence. She was like a great home cook.
Yeah.
You know, like made great carbonara, made great red sauce, you know, made baked great bread, you know, all these.
You're talking Mike Bixeglia's talk now.
She's married, bro. she really and made me eat things that I normally wouldn't eat. You know, my dad's kind of a picky eater. So my mom, you know, I mean, they grew up in that, you know, overcooked steak and green bean era, you know what I mean? So, you know, she really kind of like, you know, encouraged me to try homemade food.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Make pasta from scratch, make bread from scratch, you know, things that people get scared about normally, but are quite easy to do. You
right.
know,
just, yeah.
But, and then, you know, I ate, you know, as I got into my middle teens, you know, I started eating things like mushrooms and, you know, things like that. But, you know, my parents didn't eat a lot of that stuff. So
can you cut that he was eating mushrooms in his middle teens?
Yeah.
All right, just kidding.
The good kind, you know. But, you know, I really kind of developed like a taste for food in my early 20s.
Right.
You know,
Well, this is I think it's real cool. So, what do you do now? Like now for inspiration? I mean, so I know you read a lot, but where do you draw it from on a daily basis for dishes and food? Where is it coming from?
Well, I think that, you know, it's funny that, you know, I get it from other, you know, people that work in the industry too. Like I ate at Clifton not too long ago and I was real inspired by what Tucker does out there.
Right.
I have a pretty decent professional friendship with him. So,
You
know, I kind of decided that everything that I wanted to do and that I just never did because it got time or, you know, got in the way or, you know, maybe it was too difficult or these things.
Sure.
Like, you know, I really decided that, you know, I'm not going to buy tofu. I'm going to make my own tofu from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to make my own prosciutto, you know, you know, I'm starting getting into molecular gastronomy a little bit here and there, sort of doesn't quite jibe with our restaurant vibe, but you know, Chris dials me back a little bit from it. But you could
throw some whimsical stuff on there to.
Well, I can really go forward on the apps and the desserts. The entrees, you know, kind of are like
true enough.
You know, but you know, I get a lot of inspiration from like not feeling like I left anything on the table. You know, like instead of saying, you know, because in Charlottesville, from 50 miles around, I can get great, you know, pig legs. You know, I can get, you know, great produce or whatever I need to make, soy milk. You know, I can get great soybeans from around here. You know, whatever I need to do to make make what I want to do. And it helps to have an owner that is behind you 100% and doesn't.
Right now you're working for Christian.
Christian Kelly, yep.
And Christian was the chef at Clifton Inn.
I think.
And
after you, or one or two after you.
Yeah, probably two after, because I think Rachel Greenberg was who was my sous chef. They made the chef when I left, and then Christian came along. So
Tucker was the sous chef.
I always get excited, you know, when I look back at Clifton and see the progression, because it's neat and it's a really great place to go. And you know, having Tucker there now, but you're working for Christian. What has that brought to the table for you, working with Christian over the years?
Well, he's won Relais and Chateau, which is, you know, if you don't know what that is, it's sort of like getting a Michelin star. And if you have an inn, you know, he's got, you know, I can't stress enough, like he's got a very, you know, firm base in fundamentals, you know, like, you know, he really was able to, you know, solidify my thinking sometimes when it comes to classic French food, you know, like, you know, how that goes and you know, where, you know, it's no longer classic French, you know, wherever you pushed it too far. And, you know, he's, you know, aside from being a, you know, just a, you know, a badass cook, you know, which he is, you know, he's a great owner. He's a great chef and he's been a good friend and he's, you know, he's kind of been a mentor to me in a personal way.
Right.
I don't know how personal we want to get with this, but, you know, he's really kind
of. Well, don't tell us anything that makes me uncomfortable.
Well, I've been, you know, I've quit drinking 5 years ago. He was my first sponsor.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, my life, I wouldn't have a life right now without him.
Sure,
you know?
He
has really kind of like, you know, taught me how to be a chef from the perspective of, you know, how to manage people.
Yeah, right.
You know, how to be understanding, how to encourage people, because everybody's, you know, you're inspired a different way. This person's inspired a different way.
Yeah, everybody's different. That's what's so cool.
You got to be able to read people and, you know, try to make them feel like, you know, appreciated. And their opinions valued, and that they can contribute to whatever you're doing. Because you know, I might be, you know, have a title, but you know, it's my crew that gets it together. You know,
Sure.
You know, I'm one piece because I work a station every night, so it's like I'm just one part of that. And you know, I got a great crew, and you know, and he's kind of really kind of helped me move along into being a chef. When you say that, not just a cook. So,
well, now let me ask you that question real quick. Wait, do you consider yourself a chef?
I call my dishwasher chef. I say, chef, can I get some glasses? You know, I the expediter, you know, we don't really like have to stand on formalities with that. I mean, you know, like,
I mean, how do you feel in your heart about the whole thing? How do you feel about your success? Does it come easy to you, or do you feel like, you know, you're still working towards it?
Definitely feel like I'm still working towards it. Do I feel more comfortable within my own skin you know, having, you know, being responsible for people?
Sure.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, I do. But, you know, you know, that, you know, when you're talking about from a business sense, what a chef is, you know, they're a manager of money, you know, and profit and margins and all these things that, you know, a whole lot about,
I'm sure
from being, you know, at Keswick. But, you know, also a chef does, and you inspire somebody that's just starting out as a line cook, you know, to be the best they can be. You know, they look at you as a mentor, you know, and, you know, and then it makes it my responsibility to do things the right way, you know, to make sure they do things the right way.
Yeah. It'd be a great example and,
you know, lead by example and, you know, be the first person there and the last person to leave and, you know, don't, you know, I do dishes all day long. I don't have a dishwasher, you know? So it's like that, you know, people have to see that. And, because you wouldn't want to ask somebody to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. Yeah. You know, so. Yeah.
So what do you, you, Todd Grieger, bring to the table at Maya? What is it about you do you think that's like your strength?
You know, I try to be innovative, you know, I definitely bring focus. You know, I definitely bring attention to detail. You know, I make it my responsibility, whether that service comes off successful or not, you know, it starts with me and it stops with me. And, you know, I think I'm a pretty good cook, you know, I think, you know, I think I can, you know, other, you know, I don't like comparing myself in a greater or lesser degree to anybody. You know, I certainly, I mean, this area is filled with great chefs, you know, and I think, you know, I think my food's good,
right?
You know, I don't have any fear, you know, I'll try anything to make it, you know, and, I'm also, you know, not afraid to voice up when I, you know, managing upwards, you know, sometimes here and there, you know, which is necessary, you know, so.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, as you fell into it, I called you the accidental chef.
That's fine.
But
that's fine.
You, along the line, like my mom says, you got a lot of miles on your paintbrush. So 20 years in, you're 37, you started 17, you've been behind the line and in the trenches all these years. Now here you are in this leadership position. And, you know, that's got to serve you well to have been like in the trenches that long. Because you know as well as I do, a lot of guys get out of chef school and in 2-3 years they're an executive chef somewhere or a chef.
Yeah, ridiculous, really. But
yeah, but they also sometimes feel entitled that that's where they should be, and you've worked hard to get where you are. How do you feel about your position in your heart? Are you is this something you're excited about every day get up and go?
I mean, it's just I like solving problems, and that's kind of like in the restaurant business, it's a revolving set of problems that have to be solved every day. You know, somebody doesn't show up with your asparagus or, like, you know, your produce delivery is late, you know, whatever it has to be done. You know, I don't think that that's why it's an associate's degree in culinary education. It's not, you know, certified executive chef when you get out of school.
It's not
a
doctorate degree in culinary arts?
Negative. You know, I should say. I mean,
Doctor chef. I mean, telephone line one.
I've had interns before, you know, you know, it's a cross-section of society, just like any other group of people is, you know. I mean, some people are qualified. Some people are going to be, you know, landscaping in 3 years. You know, I mean, that's just really it.
Yeah.
I don't mince words with any of them, really. You know, like, you're going to, you know, because, I mean, and nobody has room for arrogance either, for that matter. You know, I mean, it's, and, you know, I got to, you know, I guess you could say I've, you know, they call the culinary education then coming up the hard way.
Right.
You know, if you've heard the term in the business.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
The hard way puts a chip on your shoulder in some regards, you know, because I've had to scrape by, and a lot of it's of my own making. But, you know, at the same time, like, you know, I've earned it the last 5 years. So,
well, you're there now. You're what's next? What's next for Todd Grieger?
That's a toughie. You know, I've committed myself to this year at Maya. You know, I mean. I'd love to work at McCready's in Charleston. I mean, to be honest with you, Sean Brock's doing just amazing stuff. And if, I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of him, but he doesn't look like a chef. You know, he looks like just a, you know, he doesn't look like he's got, I mean, a starch white coat, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like
food
on his coat all the time and everything, you know, he's like, he's in there working hard, but, I definitely think, into fine dining. Where I want to go, you know, and I want to own my own spot.
Right.
I want.
So you have an entrepreneurial spirit trying to get out.
I mean, I've really worked on the business aspects of what I do now over the last couple years and, you know, and the nuances of how to be like a business chef, you know.
Sure.
I don't think I could ever be a clipboard, you know, like, you know, that kind of guy. But it's. Jacqueline always tells me she, you know, I'd probably kill somebody, but I think I would, you know, definitely like to own.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
That's the one thing I got to worry about is like that I'm not good at delegating sometimes, so I have to learn how to do that. But
You know, I think as long as any chef knows that they have to learn something, they're going to grow. As soon as they think that they know
that,
everything, because I find this business really humbling, and. But as we've looked with our interviews, we see that there's no set roadmap to be successful in this business. But there is something deep inside people like yourself that draws them to the business and also causes them, you know, to excel. One more thing. Define the restaurant Maya in your words.
It is, you know, sort of a kicked up version of home food. You know, like it's certainly not soul food by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
You know, I've kind of, you know, upscaled somewhat the food there, you know, from when it opened up, and it's very fresh,
right?
From the farm to the table. It's connected to the farmer, to the customer,
right?
It's well prepared. You know, it's very, crisp and fresh, and you know, you can taste every ingredient, you know, and you know, we list our farms on the board right above the door when you come in, so you know where your food came from. You know, there is no like really any hiding there, you know, and so we're 75% local.
That's awesome.
You know, as much as we can be within it and still make money. So,
well, that's cool. Well, Todd, I've enjoyed talking to you, and I think there's a lot people can learn from you, and I hope that you enjoyed your time with me.
I did. It was enjoyable to be here. It's an honor, and I really appreciate it. And,
cool.
You know, it's always a pleasure to sit down with you,
Jeff. Well, we'll sit down some more. But anyway, folks, you've heard it right here on Chew the Fat from Chef Todd Grieger, the accidental chef. And, oh, by the way, some one of these days you're going to need your own background music. You know, Tomas has the Ben-Hur. Did you ever find that music, Mike?
Well, you know, every good hero needs his own theme.
Yeah. I love that movie. Anyway, you've heard it here on Chew the Fat. Folks, you're going to hopefully go out to Maya and try that trout that I love, because that Ragged Mountain trout, you cooked real fresh. I'm kind of hungry right now. But go try the trout, but have a good time. Ask for Todd, and you've heard his heart, so now you'll see it in his food. And don't forget to go to chewfat.net to find some recipes and sound out. And please, we're here for you. We want to know what you want. And hopefully, again, Chew the Fat will inspire you and maybe even appall you. Thanks for listening. I wasn't going to sing the song tonight or this decade. But I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this came out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago. 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage. And we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there. And there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down.
That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obi. I cannot tell a lie."